Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day. Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle with Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you, as always, for listening to our content. But for more in-depth coverage on the Indiana Hoosiers football, basketball, and recruiting news, go to thehoosier.com on three. Now with On Three and great national writers like Ari Wasserman, Andy Staples, and Steve Wiltfong for football, Pete Nakos, J.B. Shaw, and Joe Tipton's constantly breaking stories on the basketball side. And the local coverage from Alec Lasley, Kyler Staley, and Zach Browning. You can catch something new every day at thehoosier.com. Go there. Sign up today.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world,
pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard, my fellow jabronis. I hope you had a very happy Easter weekend, a holiday, and got to spend that with some friends, family, or just relaxing, whatever you wanted to do. Glad to have you along for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you as always, coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Looking forward to another fun day and lots to get to as the college football portal is open. Boy, that starts that deal. The college basketball portal is still, players still migrating in and around from that, moving about. The Pacers, their playoff run has begun, begins with a win. That is always good. And the Colts, they're on the clock almost. They're prepping for the NFL draft. Chris Ballard meeting, having a presser today. Greg Rakestraw will join us after that presser, so we'll have something good to talk about, or something worthy to talk about there without question. Lots of movement still going on in the portal, like I mentioned. Indiana football picking up a player in on the football side of things on the defensive line, which I'm sure that made Brian Haynes very happy because that's something that he mentioned that he was looking forward to, especially after they lost Burris off of the line to the portal. But they landed their first spring commitment on Sunday, yesterday, from Kent State transfer Stephen Daly. I believe he was at the spring game and looking to kind of take the place of C.J. West, who looking to hear his name called in that NFL draft coming up. Daly is a 6'1", 260-pound senior from Winchester, Virginia. He announced his commitment via social media. He's got one season of eligibility remaining and brings veteran experience and proven production to that defensive front, which is exactly where Brian Haynes needs to rebuild a little bit on. That's the only thing. It's not, I shouldn't say rebuild. That's not accurate. Just add on, baby, add on. Get it back to where it was. Daly is a former teammate of former Hoosier defensive lineman C.J. West, who transferred to Indiana prior to the 24 season. Speaking of West, he is now waiting on the draft, like I mentioned. So there's a little bit of little connection there. Hopefully that connection is just as strong as it was for C.J. West because it went very well. Daly's addition is a key piece for the second year Coach Cignetti, who continues to reshape Indiana's roster through that transfer portal. He joins Texas State defensive lineman Dominique Ratcliffe and Western Kentucky defensive lineman Hosea Wheeler as transfers, joining Indiana's defensive front this offseason and replacing Marcus Burris, who I mentioned. So good things going on there on the basketball side. Nothing new, but things are still happening as the players that are in there, they're still going different places, moving about. Let's see. On the program today, Zach Browning will join us from thehoosier.com. We'll talk mostly about football with him to get caught up on everything that is going on. But we'll mention basketball. There's just not a lot happening that went on over the weekend, I guess I should say. Also, Dustin Epirik, of course. We'll talk some Pacers and catch up a little Hoosier action as well. And Greg Rakestraw will join us, fresh off of that Chris Ballard presser. So we'll talk some Colts. We got everything going on today, people. It's everything. It's spring. Happy Easter. That's come and gone. I hope you got a chocolate bunny and some rabbits or some eggs with some money in them. My daughter doesn't do eggs. She's too old to do that. But she did get a basket. She said, I did have an egg in it with $20 in it. It was my favorite gift. So there's that. That's one thing that never goes out of style, baby. Doesn't matter how old you get. An Easter egg with cash in it. That works. Appreciate everybody joining us on the hotline. Glad to have you all along, no matter where or how you're listening. I did not have any peeps yesterday, Bill. I am not a peeps fan. If those things were so damn good, they'd be around a little bit more often, I think. They would create a Christmas version. Maybe they have. I don't know, that I've just tried to stay away from. But Cheryl Sizemore jumping on with us. Five, how are you? Appreciate everybody joining us as well, no matter where or how you're following on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, WREF in Evansville. Always the right call. Was down through there yesterday and going to visit Kylie. Caught some of the Cardinals as they carry the Cardinals baseball games. Up in the region on the Voice of the Region, WJOB, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. You've got it here for a reason. Keep it locked right there all day long throughout your travels. Doesn't matter where you're going. Bill had the Huber's Buffet for Easter dinner. Man, that's quite the buffet, let me tell you. I know. Fried chicken, all the apple butter biscuits you can manage to have. You want to talk about a good old-fashioned home-cooked meal, baby. Yeah, you go to Huber's. Speaking of Huber's, that is coming up. May 28th, it's a Wednesday, I believe, is the date for Huber's. For those of you that live in the area, but a lot of people go that now that don't even live in the area, but it's mostly for that area. It once was just Bob Knight coming down 30 years ago, and then it morphed into a much bigger deal, and now the Varsity Club runs it. There, this Indiana event at Huber's, which kind of kicks off. You'll get the football and the basketball coach together. We get to talk to them, and it's kind of the last deal for a while for us. Once we'll talk to Kurt Cignetti there, we won't get a chance to talk to him again for 2 months, and that will be at the Big Ten Media Days, which takes place in Las Vegas this year. So I am not looking forward to recording the show at an earlier time, which I'll have to do because of the time change when we go out there. But, you know, there's worse things in life. Lots going on, though. Looking forward to keeping you up to date with all of it. Speaking of which, there was a study conducted on, and I saw this in regards to how college teams could better deal with NIL and all of that business. Well, HR department. A study shows that an HR department could be the ticket to for teams to better manage dealing with this, the current disorganization in the NIL and the transfer portal era. This study came out on Friday, and it said each university should create a human resources department to enhance retention and relationships. So this would just be an extension of the human relations department, I'm asking, question mark. According to the study that came out, a study on the current climate in men's college basketball by AD Advisors Group, in conjunction with analytics firm Tenmark Partners, the headlines about top prospects who enter the portal and make millions with elite programs do not tell the full story. Most players, up to 70%, a lot of people are curious about this. Here's the number for you. 70% who enter the portal move to schools with lower profiles or even fail to find new destinations. That's a high number. I get asked that question all the time, and I didn't have an answer until now. Well, now we do. Up to 70%. Whew. So just because you see all those guys that go in the portal, they're doing so at their own peril, unless they are a Cooper Flagg, a Zach Browning, someone who is at the absolute zenith of their being. Zach's in the green room waiting to join us, and he'll do so next. And we'll catch up on this a bit, but talking more football than anything. But yeah, this is that number. Whoo, that'll jump out at you. That should also give pause to a lot of these guys. The grass is always greener. You got people chirping in your ear. Oh, dude, I can get you this. I can get you that. Oh, man, you're worth so much more. You're so much better than that. Oh, a lot of ear chirping, a lot of ear chirping going on. Well, this should be required reading. We'll get on that a lot more later on, but glad to have you along from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Lots more coming up. We're going to get to it. Zach Browning joins us next from thehoosier.com. Back with plenty more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Glad to start your week off with us. Glad to have you along. Jim Coyle with you as always, coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios, joined now by Zach Browning, Hoosiers.com football writer. And Zach, it has been a busy weekend. Happy Easter, by the way.
Thank you. You as well.
Hope you got lots of chocolate bunnies in your basket.
Yes. Of course, as always.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering if Kurt Cignetti got many bunnies in his basket, but just one so far. But that will be short-lived. But they don't need a lot. They're looking to add specific pieces, and this is one of the specific types of pieces they're looking to add to reinforce that defensive front line that Indiana did so well with last year. But you lost Burris and CJ West probably to the NFL, and there's one other I'm leaving a blank on right now, but
James Carpenter.
There you go, big one. But to get a visit and a commitment, actually, that the commitment they get is a guy that played with CJ West, so kind of a nice little handoff, handing the baton of sorts.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Stephen Daly is the guy you're talking about. Kent State defensive line transfer. He committed to Indiana yesterday. 6'1", 260 pounds. He has a lot of experience. 103 total tackles the last two seasons for Daly. He had 4 sacks last season. He's going to be an addition probably on the exterior of the defensive line. He's probably going to play edge alongside, or opposite, I should say, of Mikhail Kamara. You've got Dominique Ratcliffe and you've got Jose Wheeler. And the interior of that defensive line, those are kind of the interior defensive tackles. And you've got Kamara, who's going to likely play stud a lot this year. Daly's an important piece because that was really the one thing Indiana was missing along that defensive line, was a guy to play opposite of Mikhail Kamara that could get pressure on the quarterback. And Daly provides not only the ability to get to the quarterback, but he can also help stop the run. He's a big body down there on the defensive line. Again, as I said, 6'1", and around 260, 270 pounds there along the defensive line for Daly. I think it'll be a good addition. It'll be interesting to see. Last year, the defensive line was one of the major, major positives and a major, major strength for Indiana. We'll see if this defensive line, this kind of new look defensive front, can live up to those expectations, because it was really good last season. Obviously, Indiana was one of the best teams in the country at stopping the run last year. We'll see if the Hoosiers can repeat that this year.
Yeah, a huge part of their success last year, because when they were doing to most offensive teams, giving their own offense the opportunity to win games, which they did successfully, they're going to have to do that again, because for two reasons. A, they've got a target on their back now because they're not sneaking up on anybody. And then secondly, they want to go back to the college football playoffs, and that schedule is jacked up just a little bit. So they're going to have to play a little better than they did last year. They're going to have to succeed, which means you're going to have just as good or better players to do that. Luckily, that defense is anchored by All-Americans from the front to the back. But that only goes so far. You cannot have weak spaces, weak links in the chain. So they have got to strengthen that chain, which is, of course, what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's still a little bit unknown, and I'd be surprised if the current way the team looks like right now is the way the team looks like going into week one of the season in the fall. There will still be some transfer portal additions for Indiana this offseason, not only just this week with the transfer portal closing on Friday, but in the coming months, because guys who are in the portal can still commit for however long, up until week one of the season. So it'll still be a long road for Indiana to kind of fill out the roster. There's not going to be any big, big names. There's not going to be any high-level, talented players probably coming in, but there will be guys that can come in and fill in roster spots. You mentioned the All-Americans, Mikhail Kamara on the defensive front, Aiden Fisher at linebacker, and D'Angelo Pons at cornerback. That's a fantastic foundation. There's many teams around the country that do not have just three players of that caliber on the defense. Indiana is one of them. That defense is anchored, as you mentioned, by those three All-Americans. Then the issue is filling out that depth and finding that production from other places outside of those three All-Americans, because as you know, you play 11 guys on defense. You don't just play three guys on defense. You got to find production out of the other eight spots. The linebacker room is, for me, probably what I'm circling the most heading into the summer and then heading into eventually fall camp in week one of the college football playoffs or college football season next year. Because linebacker, you lose Jalen Walker. You have Isaiah Jones or Elijah Hardy. Those will probably be the two guys that try and step up and replace that production. But Jalen Walker was special last season alongside Aiden Fisher. Jalen Walker's been getting some late round NFL draft buzz potentially. He'll probably be an undrafted free agent at the very least. He was a stud, fantastic, uber athletic, versatile. I don't know if Isaiah Jones or Elijah Hardy are either at that level. They definitely aren't. But can the two of them combine to kind of replace that production? Time will tell. In the secondary, though, I think that's where Indiana can be even better than they were last year, because they have D'Angelo Pons back. They have Jamari Sharp back. But then you bring in a lot of experience and a guy like Ryland Gandy from Pitt, Amari Knighton from NIU. And then in the secondary, even deeper, the safety, Amari Farrell's another year of experience. Devon Boykin, who will probably start at Rover from NC State, has plenty of experience. And you look at Lou Moore, he's familiar with Bloomington. He was here 2 years ago, just not in the Kurt Cignetti-led and Bryant Haynes-led defense. So I think, yes, you have the three All-Americans, but again, you play eight other guys in addition to those All-Americans on the defense at one given time. So you got to find the depth. You got to find the production outside of those guys. And we'll see. Linebacker is probably what I'm circling right now to try and find that production. Isaiah Jones, Elijah Hardy, they're great. They're good. They're still young. They're not necessarily super experienced as far as playing time goes. So we'll see what Indiana gets. Specific at the linebackers, that's what I'm circling heading into the summer.
Ironically, that there are two football players now on this team that played for IU, left the transfer portal, went to other schools, and have now returned, one on each side of the ball, you just mentioned, and Khalil Benson on the offensive line. That's just weird that to see that guys that played for IU, left IU, they're back to IU. It's crazy. But it is what it is. Let's see. What else? There was something else I was going to mention. Oh, yeah. Former Georgia wide receiver visiting Purdue, which is kind of weird. Nitro Tuggle, I should say. That's a perfect name. Nitro Tuggle. But Indiana, one of the teams mentioned as possibly one that could be getting involved with him as well. I cannot imagine anybody going to Purdue right now, just for obvious reasons. If you're a pretty good player, other than you might stand out if they can get the ball to you. Other than that, that would be a little bit of a surprise. But that's another wide receiver. Indiana is good at wide receiver, but you can never have too much elite.
You're exactly right, and specifically in the slot, that's what Nitro Tuggle would bring. He did just take that Purdue visit that begins on Monday, so it begins today, the Purdue visit for him. Indiana, Syracuse, Texas Tech are probably those top four teams. Indiana's probably, if I had to rank them right now, probably Purdue in the lead because they've got him actually on campus for that visit. So we'll see if he makes it through that visit without committing to Purdue, then if Indiana's able to get him on campus, things could change. But right now, Purdue looks like they're trending probably for Nitro Tuggle, but it'll probably be an in-state battle between Indiana and Purdue. And that's kind of the position where you're circling heading into this summer. That's the biggest question mark because there's not a lot of depth at receiver. The top-end talent is there. Elijah Surratt, Omar Cooper, EJ Williams, Kurt Cignetti's thrown Charlie Becker into that top elite upper echelon mix as well for Indiana. But after that, there's not a ton there. You've got Mekhi Jackson. He's been dealing with the hamstring throughout spring practice. It actually held him out of the spring game, that hamstring did. Of course, Tyler Morris, the Michigan transfer, lost for the season due to a non-contact knee injury. And then it's just a bunch of freshmen. Now, LeBron Bond, who was a freshman wide receiver, he showed out in that spring game. So that'll be interesting to see if Bond gets some playing time and gets some early reps. But he's just a freshman. Probably in the slot is where you're going to see him. Then there's Davion Chandler, a four-star out of Lawrence North, who went to the same high school that Omar Cooper did. There's a lot of high expectations for Chandler. But again, after those top four, after Surratt, Becker, Cooper, and Williams, and even Mekhi Jackson, after those top five where Mekhi Jackson was dealing with some injury issues, there's just not a lot of depth, and they're all freshmen at that point. So I think Indiana would do well, and I'll group them together. Look for a pass catcher in the transfer portal. I was talking with Alec Lastly of the Hoosier.com the other day. It's not necessarily just about getting a wide receiver. It's about getting a pass catcher because you could circle and throw tight end in there as well. Indiana just needs somebody else that can go run routes and go run in the patterns, be split out wide and catch passes from Fernando Mendoza. So whether that's a slot guy, whether that's a guy that can play on the outside, Indiana needs somebody that can go out and catch passes. Maybe EJ Williams slides into the slot a little bit. He did so a little bit in the spring game. He's not necessarily the prototypical short, fast, super quick slot guy, but he's big, physical, can run routes really well, and that's a matchup nightmare in the slot for any defense. But it'll be interesting. Pass catcher, Nitro Tuggle would be one of those options. We'll see if it comes down to Indiana and Purdue. Again, I give Purdue probably the slight edge right now just because they have him actually on campus today on this Monday. But again, Indiana needs some form of pass catcher most likely. After that Tyler Morris injury, they're thin. Kurt Cignetti said it himself. I'd be surprised, whoever it is, whether it's an outside guy, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a slot guy, if Indiana didn't go out and get somebody to get catch passes from Fernando Mendoza this season.
Yeah, when I hate to say it, but it doesn't matter. You can take the name Purdue out. Just any team that was not very good last year. They were really, really bad. And so when you have a school like Indiana who had a lot of success and is poised to repeat that success, and the very position you play is a position they have in need, how you would pass that up, it doesn't make sense to me. But there's a lot more that goes on in the conversations. There's a lot more that goes on. I understand that. But, boy, on paper, it sure looks like that's a no-brainer for both Nitro Tuggle and Indiana.
I think the issue for Purdue is they don't really have any other wide receivers. So it's kind of like the Lamar Wilkerson debate of football. You can go to Purdue and kind of be the number one option. You can go to Purdue and be the pass catcher, the guy who's going to put up close to 100 receptions, close to 1,000 yards, catch 10 touchdown passes this season. You can come to IU and be a little bit more successful.
Can they get the ball to you?
Exactly. That's the other point. Who's going to play quarterback for Purdue this season? Barry Odom's offense is creative, and I think that's probably a little bit of a selling point as well. If you look at what UNLV did the past couple of seasons under Barry Odom, that offense is creative. They will split four guys out wide to either side of the formation all the way to the boundaries. They're creative with how they get the ball to their playmakers and their fast playmakers, especially a guy like Nitro Tuggle. But again, you're comparing, can you be the number one option, maybe number two option at Purdue on a not good Big Ten team, or can you be the number four, number three option at Indiana on a team that could potentially go back to the college football playoff, could potentially make some noise in the Big Ten?
And Rudy, with a very accurate point, Purdue was saying the same thing about Indiana not that long ago, and they were very accurate in that. But my, how the times have turned. You mentioned tight end as a position that could work in there. I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised Indiana has not utilized the tight end more, or did not use the tight end more last year, because under Kirk Cignetti's previous offenses at James Madison and whatnot, the tight end was used a lot more, especially in goal line situations. Down near the goal line, I'll never forget that before the two running backs transferred to Indiana following Cignetti here, the tight end had as many touchdown catches as both running backs combined had. So I was like, okay, they use the tight end a lot, especially in those situations. That wasn't the case last year for Indiana, but I don't know if that was because he just had more weapons to use or what the case was. But that's the thing about a Cignetti offense. He's looking to have every available weapon possible, whether it's a wide receiver, slot receiver, running back as the receiver, running back, quarterback with mobility. That's also something Indiana's going to have this year that they didn't have last year. And I'm not talking about Fernando Mendoza running a lot, but being able to escape situations, create a little bit longer, maybe hold the ball a little longer, extend plays, things like that, that will just give Indiana a tick more advantage. And you have to find that added something to go further than you did last year.
Yeah, it's all about finding that extra edge, and I think potentially the mobility of Fernando Mendoza can do that. We know that it's something that Mike Shanahan and Kirk Cignetti like to use in their offense. I mean, just look back to that Michigan game. Curtis Rourke sealed that game on a torn ACL by keeping the ball and running for a first down on a torn ACL. Fernando Mendoza, he's more mobile than Curtis Rourke. It's just plain and simple. He's more mobile, he's quicker, he's faster, he's a little bit lighter, and of course he's not playing on a torn ACL, so that probably helps a little bit too. So it'll be interesting to see how Indiana kind of throws in that wrinkle this season, because it can sort of add an extra element to the RPO game. It can kind of add, you've got the handoff you can give, you've got the throw over the middle to a guy like Elijah Surratt on that RPO, but now if you can throw in Mendoza pulling that ball out and keeping it and running himself, that's a whole nother wrinkle that the opposing defense has to game plan for. And Indiana saw it firsthand, what Riley Leonard did with his legs. I'm not saying Indiana's going to use Fernando Mendoza like Riley Leonard was used by Notre Dame last year, because that's just a recipe for Mendoza to get hurt. Mendoza's not as well built as Riley Leonard is. But you saw what it did to an Indiana defense that was one of the top-ranked defenses in the country. It's just another wrinkle you have to defend against. And when you have to add that extra wrinkle, it's much more difficult to play defense, whether it's the RPO game, whether it's a rollout where Mendoza can either throw it deep, or if he's already rolled out of the pocket, he can take off and run. I think the quarterback running game, not necessarily designed running game, but just as an option for Mendoza, it'll keep the defenses more honest. It'll help with blitz pickups, because a defense can't just blitz you knowing that you aren't going to be able to escape the pocket like we saw with Rourke last season. That was kind of something that inhibited Indiana against Ohio State. Ohio State was able to just pretty much rush five, get to the backfield, and Rourke didn't have the mobility on that torn ACL really to escape that pocket. Mendoza does. So it'll be interesting to see how that extra wrinkle is added this season with Mendoza being able to get out of the pocket and being able to run. It was something that a lot of his Cal teammates, and he did frequently at Cal, was get out of the pocket, extend plays. D'Angelo Pons this past week after the spring game said, Mendoza looks to extend plays to throw the ball, not necessarily to run, but he's still got that ability to run as that backup option.
Away from Indiana now, but some other Big Ten news, UCLA lands a gigantic fish in quarterback Nico Lamalima from the transfer quarterback from Tennessee. I mentioned that because UCLA was a team last year that Indiana went out and kind of curb stomped and really jump started this Cignetti bonfire that took off. Then you have the connection of Indiana's former OC out there now and lands a big, big fish in that quarterback. So, and UCLA on the Indiana schedule again this year as they will come to Bloomington late in the season on October 25th.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Nico, I'm just going to leave it at Nico. Nico is an interesting quarterback because he's so young, yet he's also so good. You mentioned Tino Sinceri. How about going from Curtis Rourke in the college football playoff in 1 year to now out to the West Coast, beautiful UCLA, beautiful Pasadena, and coaching Nico Iamaleava. There you go. I pronounced it once. That's the last time I'm going to do it, though.
But see, Nico, I just call him Lamaliva.
Yeah, it's a tongue twister to do for sure. If you put your mind to it, you can get it, but it's difficult to get to. But Nico, it's a rough situation. It's kind of a situation where he put his trust and his agency into the wrong people, and we kind of saw how that played out. The reports are that he's probably making less money at UCLA than he was at Tennessee. So it's an interesting situation. Exactly.
I mean, you're going from an SEC school, an SEC school that's banging for a championship, to one that is already known to have NIL problems. Hell, they don't have NIL. They have NIL issues for basketball and football, which is amazing. They're in the city of Los Angeles, the second largest city in America. And but doesn't matter. They landed a pretty good quarterback.
And it'll be interesting. Does he have the weapons around him? Because that's what he had to an extent at Tennessee. Obviously, if you're at Tennessee, you have weapons around you. That's an SEC football program. It's one of the top SEC football programs. So we'll see. Time will tell if Nico, A, has the weapons around him, and B, if that UCLA defense is good enough to keep them in games, because it was a little bit of a struggle last season. The defense wasn't great for the Bruins. So we'll see. You've got to have a team around a star quarterback. They have the quarterback, but do they have the pieces around that quarterback? Time will tell.
Well, a quarterback that's a perfect example of that is Fernando Mendoza, who threw for over 3,000 yards but ran for his life most of the time, getting sacked 41 times. So it's going to be interesting to see what Fernando Mendoza can do this year with protection. Indiana has improved their offensive line, which is probably the weakest link in their chain last season. It's going to be interesting to see what that does for the running game, what it does for Fernando Mendoza, the passing game, and everything, the offense as a whole. Because from the outside, it looks like, as hard as it is to say, with when you had a year like we did with Curtis Rourke, that this offense could possibly be better. And I think that this offense might be better.
The numbers might agree with you there, Jen. The numbers might agree with you specifically on Fernando Mendoza, because I did this for a story a couple of weeks ago. Fernando Mendoza comparing his numbers, his PFF numbers, so the advanced metrics, all that stuff last year at Cal, to Curtis Rourke's advanced metrics his last season at Ohio, to kind of get a look of where they both were before they get that uptick in production when you come into an offense like Indiana's, because you're going to get that uptick. Indiana's offense is good enough. The weapons are there. Shanahan's good enough. Cignetti's good enough. We're going to get a boost in production, a boost in numbers when you get to Indiana, when you get to Bloomington. And the numbers actually said that Fernando Mendoza in his final season at Cal last year was better than Rourke was in Rourke's final season at Ohio. The PFF numbers were pretty much better all across the board, whether it was throwing it deep, throwing it in the intermediate, play action, whatnot, when he was blitzed, when he wasn't pressured, etc. You can go check out that article over at thehoosier.com. But the numbers back up that before they both got to Bloomington, before they both got to Indiana, Fernando Mendoza was a better quarterback than Curtis Rourke was before they both got to Indiana. So that, to me, is a sign of what could be to come. Because not only do you have Mendoza for this year, you have Fernando Mendoza for next season as well. He's got eligibility left. So if he's got one system where he can take as a quote-unquote developmental year in the system and still be fantastic, his senior season, he could be one of the top, if not the top, quarterbacks in the country based on how good Curtis Rourke was last year and how good Fernando Mendoza is projected to be. So only time will tell again. We're still a ways away from the college football season, and Mendoza will have much more time. I think that's a big thing. He's going to have much more time in the pocket. That was the number that really jumped off the page last season to me. When he wasn't pressured, which wasn't very often at Cal last year, he was fantastic. He was one of the top quarterbacks in the ACC last season when he wasn't pressured. He just happened to be pressured as often as he was. So with the new look offensive line, with better weapons, with a running game that can truly be a counter to the passing game, that can truly be a 1-2 headed attack for Indiana's offense next season, I think the sky is the limit for Mendoza. And he's already shown that he can put the ball where he needs to, especially deep. Indiana loves to go deep. They love to throw that ball deep down the sideline to Elijah Surratt. That's Fernando Mendoza's bread and butter. So only time will tell. But I think Mendoza has all the tools, all the capabilities, the numbers back it up too, that he could be just as good, if not better, than Curtis Rourke was during Rourke's historic season last year at Indiana.
Yeah, Fernando looked pretty good at Indiana's pro day, throwing a lot of deep balls that were on the money. Switching topics for just a second, Zach covers baseball pretty efficiently as well. And, excuse me, Indiana wins their first series that they didn't, 2-1, their first 2-1 series. Why is that such a big deal? I was able to catch through some of the game when I was driving yesterday, and I kept hearing that over and over, that this is the first Big Ten series, at least, I think, in quite some time, that they had won 2-1 as opposed to 3-0. So why is that such a huge deal?
It's a big deal because Indiana just needs wins at this point. This is a team on the baseball side of things where they came into the year as a fringe top 25 team in the country, haven't necessarily lived up to those expectations. The health hasn't been there. The pitching staff has struggled at times when they've needed the most. The offense sometimes hasn't come through. This is a team that's probably not going to get an at-large bid at this point. They just don't have the quantity of wins, let alone the quality of wins, heading down the backstretch of the season. So it's big for Indiana, though, because at this point, new Big Ten tournament for baseball. It's a new look Big Ten tournament. They'll have pool play. Only 12 teams make the Big Ten tournament in baseball. So at this point, if Indiana lost this series this weekend, making the Big Ten tournament wasn't going to be easy. It was going to be a little bit of a challenge. They're still now rock solid in the Big Ten tournament. That's all Indiana's hoping to do at this point. You get into the Big Ten tournament, and then you can try and win that Big Ten tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. That's the path to postseason play for Indiana. But this past weekend was big because, as you said, they hadn't won a series 2-1 in the Big Ten this year at all. They'd swept two teams. They'd swept Ohio State and Michigan State. But then they'd have also lost a lot of series, whether it was getting swept, whether it was losing 1-2. So it's a big series to get back on track and really solidify their place in the Big Ten tournament come mid-May.
Zach Browning from thehoosier.com. Just like that, he's got that kind of information and constantly more content at thehoosier.com. Appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy your week.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. Enjoy your week as well.
What's up next for you, by the way?
I don't know. It's little 5 week, so it's little 5 week.
There is that.
I'll be broadcasting the little five, the men's little 5 race on the IU student radio come Saturday.
Do you, when you're broadcasting that, do you broadcast that from a stationary bike?
I wish, although I'd probably run out of breath within the first 20 or 30 laps.
I think that should be a requirement that when you're calling the little 5, that you do so from a stationary bike, and maybe they could even put some cables up there where the guys have to go around with them, like the little drone deals, you know. Just gives you a more lifelike understanding of what's going on, right?
I'll talk to the people at Bill Armstrong Stadium. Maybe we can fit that in the press box there.
Zach Browning from thehoosier.com. Make sure you go there and sign up today, or you're missing out right now. Zach, appreciate you, brother.
Thank you so much, Jim.
You betcha. Hey, we've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along for the ride. It was a nice weekend, enjoyable. Got to see Kylie. That's all that matters. Had a belly full of food yesterday and enjoyed it immensely. Hope you did as well. Glad to be back in studio. As it'll be a busy week with names flipping around, going here to there, lots coming up. You've got the Kentucky Derby that is only 2 weeks away. Just the the transfer portal action that will be a nonstop viewing for fans that are looking for players, teams that are looking for players, and one on the basketball side for Indiana, 2025 four-star center, an intriguing name to keep track of, Leo Curtis. He's 7'1". He has reopened his recruitment after originally committing to Arizona State over Indiana and West Virginia during his initial recruitment. Sources have told the Hoosier.com might be mutual interest. I would imagine there might be, because that is a position that Indiana needs to fill. Although, don't forget, that's a 2025 guy. Big, yeah, but the experience, not sure how much weight he has on him. I don't have his particulars pulled up, but I wouldn't want to look to a freshman as an integral part, not a contributing part, but an integral part, as in a starter, unless it's a Cooper Flag kind of guy. That's a one and done generally. Most times freshmen are just not going to start. You can't count on freshmen to do that. That's a big ask. So we'll see how that goes. Indiana and Darren DeVries has added, what, 6 players thus far? You got 6 more spots to go. A lot of bigs. Half of those are going to be bigs that Indiana needs to fill. And different types. Guys that can play and can, I don't want to say dominate the middle, but have multiple degrees of abilities to not just be a guy that has to live at the post. You're not going to have, I can tell you, somebody you won't have on this team is an Umar Ballo. There is not going to be a guy who is just planted, stationary. This offense does not afford stationary movement. That would kind of screw up the rest of the rotation of what's going on. So you're going to have a guy there that has some mobility. If nothing else, just to be able to drag his own guy out away from the rim, open things up, create more better passing lanes, spacing, the whole deal. You can't clog that paint up, man, like it has been. Indiana's offense has been like a plumbing line with just a big old wad of hair and soap in it for a long time. Not a lot getting through. They've got to open that up, and that's about to happen. So, look forward to seeing that when it finally happens. Right now, Tayton Conaway, Tucker DeVries, Reed Bailey, Connor Enright, Lamar Wilkerson. Those are the bigger names that have been added. Who's the next? And, you know, both football and basketball are doing this the same way. You know, there's been a lot of comparisons ever since Kurt Cignetti did what he did. A lot of comparisons when someone else is building another program, like the IU basketball program. A lot of fans will go back, and I've done it myself accidentally, but there are some similarities. Neither one of these programs under Cignetti or DeVries are being built on the backs of quote-unquote superstars. Not bringing these gigantic names in that one would hear. I know that looks good, sounds good on paper. Fans love that. But the most important thing is you have the program that you want, that you have the personnel that you want as a coach, because you're the one who has the plan. You're the one that has the blueprint. So you know the materials you need to build this. And while it has been surprising that Indiana did what they did on the football side, especially on the football side, because it's a lot more difficult to do it football-wise, but Kurt Cignetti did it with guys from didn't matter where. Hell, a bunch from James Madison. But the guys he had at James Madison were the guys that he wanted, were the type of players he wanted. I'm assuming, and I can only go with that, is what Darren DeVries is doing right now. He's building this in the way that he wants it to be, the way he thinks it has to be to have the success that he wants to have on the court next season. And he wants to have success on the court next season. This is now, they're the days of rebuilding, they're gone. Anybody that ever talks about, well, you know, you got to give, nope, you ain't got to do jack. You don't have to give a coach 4 years. You don't have to give a coach 3 years. Nope, no, you do not. That's over. It would be nice. I'm not going to lie. It would be nice because I think that when you get into that situation, there are always also ways that that can be undone quickly when you have to build something so fast. It just takes one or two pieces to go down and whoops. So it's a catch 22, but while we would all love to see changes in all of this craziness that's going on, I don't know that I see any changes anytime soon. I don't know what they can do. I mean, legally right now, what they can do, because they always lose. I don't understand why there has to be a, for the betterment of the system, but at the same time, I understand that, you know, the money can't be going in one direction like it used to go, and that was to the schools. So it's a lot to have to figure out in a short period of time, because they've gone from it being an absolute crime to pay player to an absolute necessity in a very little short period of time. We're not talking about spanning over a decade or even longer. We're not talking about from back in the 80s. We're talking about right now, just within this recruiting cycle of a guy that's a senior now that was a freshman. Look at the change that has happened in their time. It's crazy. It is crazy. Man, we've got a lot more coming up. Dustin DePerrick will join us. We'll catch up with the Pacers as they win their first playoff game. They're back in action again tomorrow. We'll talk a little Indiana basketball. And the Colts, they're on the clock. Chris Ballard with a presser today. Greg Rakestraw will join us after that presser, so we'll have some info on that. Lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. We're back with it and more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along. I hope you had a wonderful Easter. Enjoyed some hearty ham or whatever it is that you had. I did happen to have ham. You know, one of my favorite things is just, it doesn't matter what it is. Ham, mashed potatoes, green beans, the old-fashioned stuff, Dustin DePerrick. I'm just a good old meat and potatoes. That's because I never get that. Green beans are great. Didn't have green beans, had asparagus instead. That's okay. But the corn, the old-fashioned, I'm great with that. I don't eat that much. But how was your Easter?
It was good. Good. Got to, caught a lucky break as far as playoff scheduling was concerned. Pacers didn't practice yesterday, so got to drive up to South Bend after the game. Lucky for an early tip on Saturday, obviously 1 p.m. tip on Saturday. And then so got to drive up to South Bend and, spend the time there with my wife's family and came back, last night and, didn't miss anything here. So that's good.
That is great. And speaking of which, how about those Pacers? They get the first playoff game in and they win it with ease. Of course, Damian Lillard not there, but he was there and he made his presence known. I don't know that I've ever seen a player off the bench get a technical, other than coming into a fight or something, but did he get a T for just chirping?
Yeah, I mean, I see that plenty. James Johnson does it all the time. So that's not new as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, no, And that's just how it goes with this rivalry. That's kind of what it's about in the first place. You know, and I think Damian Lillard in particular takes exception to certain things. I mean, Tyrese Halliburton pokes that bear more than once. Just, you know, he didn't do it this time, but does the Dame Time celebration. You know, Ty was making all kinds of noise. Pascal Siakam was making all kinds of noise. And, you know, and the Bucks have this sense that the Pacers haven't earned it, or they talk when they're not supposed to, or something. I don't know. There's obviously a rivalry that goes back to last year on all kinds of things. And, you know, Lillard in particular feels aggrieved about it, which, you know, I kind of get, because it's just, you know, for as much as
losing does that.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, the guy's also, he probably said something like, I'm coming back and I'm coming to get you. I mean, like he is in the midst of a medical marvel, first off. I mean, you know, only 3 weeks out from being diagnosed with deep vein thrombosis, and he's looking at a return soon. I mean, like it doesn't sound like, I don't know if it's possible he'll be back for game two. But you know, the way they discussed it, it seems like game three is a very, very real possibility. It seems like it'd be a surprise if he's not available for game three. And so you're talking about, you know, a month total recovery from diagnosis to being back on the floor. And, you know, that's amazing. You know, so it obviously just comes back to, you know, I guess early detection, being able to use blood thinners very, very quickly. You know, I mean, like, it's sort of scary. Like, if you've ever known anybody on blood thinners, you know, like it's one of those things where it's not something to mess with. So you have to know that you're sure that you're ready to go, because you can, you know, the point of it is you can bleed. And so, yes, you know, apparently by all accounts that they are being very, very smart with this and know what they're doing, but still, you know, it is pretty remarkable to be in that position. So I get, if I'm Lillard, I mean, I would be chirping probably and saying like, I'm coming back, you're not going to do this again. Because I mean, you look at just the narrative of that game the other day. I mean, they got nothing from the rest of the starting lineup outside of Giannis. I mean, virtually nothing. I mean, 14 points total from four guys. And Lillard is looking like, this is not going to happen when I'm here. Just so you know, if you guys are having an easy time and this is going to change because I'm coming back and I'm going to be a problem for you. You know, like, I don't know that's what he said, but if it was him, that's probably what I would have said, you know? And even he's like, I'm going to get double that by myself on an easy night. You know, so don't, if you guys think that you're going to waltz, like, I'm coming back and I'm going to be a problem.
Yeah, I don't know that it's the smartest thing for the Pacers to do. I think they just need to focus on winning the series and go on to the next deal, because this should be one of the easier parts of this playoff path for them. But you can't ever take anything as easy. This is professional sports, man.
No. I mean, I don't think they are taking it easy. They just like to talk. I mean, they're and it is sort of it's, what am I trying to say here? Like, when you get around these guys, you'll get a sense that, like, how much the jawing is fuel, you know, like how, and how much they get out of it. Like, because I mean, they're there, like, you know, person to person for, you know, they, like, you know, they're not guarding the same guy for 48 minutes or anything like that, but like, they talk, they just do, you know, and like, that gears them up, is being able to say like, I got you or whatever. I mean, like, whatever it is, like, it is more constant in the game than I think we realize watching it, you know. And I don't know, I mean, like, I certainly didn't make a lot of noise when I played because I wasn't very good. You know, like, I can never imagine telling someone like, I'm gonna drop 40 on you or whatever, because it wasn't true. Like, I knew I couldn't back that up, but like, these guys, I mean, they just do. And Halliburton's the type that he does. Like, Halliburton's a big WWE guy. Like, he's just built that way. You know, he just likes talking, and it's sort of like, that makes him more confident. You know, like, a lot of times he's got a better chance of making shots if he's playing that way and playing with that kind of confidence. And just, you know, I mean, there was one play, I think Turner hit a three, and he looks over at Doc Rivers and goes, you know, because basically like, you need one, go take a timeout. And, you know, but like, Luka does that, LeBron does that, like, they all do that. It's just how they're wired. And it, you know, they it is something they get out of. Like, it's not a situation where, oh, they would be better if they just shut up. Like, they wouldn't. They'd be worse. You know, like, they definitively are better players because like, that fuels them. You know, and they like going after that guy. They like that guy going after them. Like, they do, you know, I like I was surprised how much of them like to play other guys who talk, because they're like, okay, well, I don't have to hold back then. Like, they like going against guys like Dylan Brooks, because like, well, Dylan Brooks is going to talk and I don't have to hold back, you know, like I don't have to be nice. And so it's like, you know, it's interesting that way, that it is such a part of the game that they, you know, they get something out of it. It's not like, you know, it's making them worse. It's not like, oh, you know, you're writing checks you can't cash, you know, that kind of thing. It's like they're all writing the checks. And like, basically the criticism of the Pacers is that when they lose, they don't talk. You know, like apparently like the Pacers don't really get it. You know, they're like, I don't understand what you mean. Like, what, when we're losing, we're quiet. Like, of course we are. Like, who isn't? But like, their view is like, okay, like if you're going to talk, you better talk all the time. Like, you know, that's how it's going to be. So, you know, I mean, it's just there is an ethics to it that I don't think all of us get. And you just kind of have to let it ride.
Yeah, because, and I would think about it, you know, this is nothing. This is not the era of trash talking.
No.
This is like Sunday school compared to what it used to be. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Man.
Nobody's throwing punches out of this. No.
No. So, like, and getting away with it. No, right. No technicals. Throwing a punch, sure, and not getting a technical. You know, Larry Bird considered one of the greatest trash talkers in the history of the game. So right. It's something that has been going on forever. And guys just love to do it, especially when you can back it up. Yeah. That's the one you don't want to deal with, is the guy who's talking smack, who's telling you exactly what he's going to do to you, and then he does it. Mm-hmm. That's pretty hard to take.
Yeah, no, it is. And you know, like, you saw, caught a little bit of it on camera, you know, or on the mics, I think, you know, the other game in Memphis obviously had a brutal, you know, afternoon yesterday. But you know, they, John Morant basically told Anthony Davis he was coming right at him, and you know Memphis got him again, and so it's just like, that's what they do, you know, and that's kind of how they're wired. And it's just the guys that are at that level do back it.
The Pacers are back up and at it tomorrow as they return to playoff play against Milwaukee in game two. We'll see if they can continue to do that. Dustin will rejoin us here in a second. But also, there was a game I want to talk to him about. Oklahoma City, who has just decimated everybody in the Western Conference, destroyed. They become one of the few, I forget how many teams it is I saw, but they become just one of the fewest teams to ever win a playoff game by 50. That's just, I don't even know the words to put to that. It's crazy. It is nuts. Dustin rejoining us. I was just talking about how crazy, you know, Oklahoma City has really just dominated the West like nobody. And then they go out and they win a playoff game by 50. I'm like, okay, does that solidify that they're that daggone stinking good, or is the West that weak?
Oh, the West is really good. No, I mean, the other part of it is, you know, like the Thunder played the Grizzlies played a play-in game on Friday night, and basically they had to be back at it 36 hours later on the road. You know, like Oklahoma City caught a break by the fact that they had, you know, you get a week off where the play, you know, the play-in round happens. Like if you're a playoff team that qualifies top, you know, top six, and certainly if you're one of the top two seeds, you're getting a team that has to go through the play-in round. If you're the one seed, you get a team that has to go through the whole play-in round. And they're, you know, going all the way until, you know, they've got a, you know, Grizzlies had a late tip on Friday night. I mean, because it's, you know, the East goes first and then the West goes second. So that was a tight turnaround for Memphis to go from playing probably 9:30 game on Friday night to having to be on the road and play in Oklahoma City on Sunday. You know, they caught a team that, you know, again, they had to play two play-in games throughout the week. Oklahoma City got a whole week to rest. It makes a difference. But I do think Oklahoma City is really good. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, I don't think the rest of this series will be that bad. I don't think they're beating Memphis four times by 50 points. I don't think they're beating Memphis four times by 30 points. You know, that I think that is an anomaly. And I think it comes from, you know, you're playing a team that had to expend a lot of energy all week and you didn't. And so, but I mean, the Grizzlies got a tough, tough draw. And I have questions about whether or not that there was some purposeful in this, because obviously John Moran has been poking the bear of the league office lately. So I wonder if he didn't catch a, not a stray, but a, you know, kind of a, you know, you want to mess with us, here's what we can do, sort of thing. And so I, you know, because I mean, they're not getting, the Pacers got 2 days between game one and two. They get 2 days between game two and three. You know, like they have plenty, like that Pacers Bucks series has plenty of rest baked into it, you know, for both teams, obviously. You know, Thunder Grizzlies does not, like, you know, Thunder got a whole week off and the Grizzlies, you know, basically just got one day, and they don't have 2 days in between games until between game five and six, I think. So I think they're catching a tough break. They're just really catching a tough scheduling break, you know, considering, again, they had to play two play-in games to assure themselves inclusion here. And so it seems like they just got a short end of the stick, and they got the 1 p.m. tip. You know, the Heat had to win, you know, the Heat won two games to get in, you know, because they were the 10 seed, so they had to beat Chicago to get into the 8. And, you know, they played a 7 o'clock game last night. They at least had a little bit more rest, you know, to get into play Cleveland than Memphis did against Oklahoma City. So there's something there, but I really like Oklahoma City. I mean, the West is good. You know, Denver's good. The Clippers are good. The Warriors are good. The Rockets are good. You know, the Lakers are good. The Timberwolves are good. Like, all those teams are good. Clippers Nuggets was an overtime game. You know, Timberwolves, you know, the sixth seed come out and smack the Lakers around. That was kind of one of the more surprising games in the series. You know, Stephen Curry was fantastic as the seven, you know, like leading the Warriors to a win as the seven last night. You know, that West is going to be wild, but Oklahoma City's really good. They're really built well for the modern game. You know, basically for the spread out game, for having to defend a lot of people. I mean, and you know, they went with a huge starting lineup. Yesterday they got Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein in there. So you're starting two bigs, but Chet Holmgren can get out on the perimeter. And one, he can handle it, he can shoot it, and he can actually defend it, you know, getting out and going and guarding, you know, bigger fours. Obviously, the Grizzlies have a bigger lineup with Jaren Jackson and Zach Edey together as a starting five. So, you know, Memphis or Oklahoma City can match up on that. And they've got wings all day to go cover you. But it's Lugans Dort, it's Jalen Williams, it's Cason Wallace off the bench, it's Alex Caruso as a kind of a point of attack defender off the bench, it's the other Jalen Williams off the bench. You know, they've got just a lot of pieces that really fit the way the game is played now. They've got shooters, they've got, you know, again, wing defenders, and then they have the MVP. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably going to win it, probably going to beat Jokic by a bit, and he is just so incredibly steady. And he had a bad game yesterday. Like, that's the amazing part. They won by 50, and Shai was like 2 of 10 from the floor. And that's not normal, you know, like basically if you're not getting a good game from Shai and you beat, you know, again, a playoff team by 50, like, you look good. Again, they had some advantages, they you know, got some good things baked in as far as the schedule was concerned, but they got a loaded team. I'm picking them to win the whole thing. I'm picking the Thunder to win the whole thing. They look terrific to me. And, you know, I mean, I think they could get challenged. I think they'll be challenged. They can be challenged by Denver, by the Clippers, by the Lakers, by the Warriors, by the Rockets, you know, any of those teams that could come up and get them, you know, in the semis or in the finals, you know, they could cause some problems, but and they're going to be tougher over a 7-game series, and they got to prove that they can do it. You know, last year they went down in the Western Conference semis to Luka and the Mavericks, but I think they're talented enough. They look determined enough. I think Mark Daniel, I don't even know how he said it. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a really, really good coach, and they've got great pieces. And so I really like that Oklahoma City Thunder team a whole lot.
Yeah, it's hard to pick against them. I mean, they're having one of those historic kinds of seasons. It's going to be fun to see them playing against Luka Doncic and that
Lakers,
other
team. If it happens, but for. Yeah, the Lakers. I think it was kind of a big deal. We talked about that. There were some things. Some guys are – Nico Harrison's in trouble over that. No. Well, I mean, I didn't get to see it because I was driving up to South Bend, but the Timberwolves smacked the Lakers around in game one. Now, that was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, the Lakers played really, really well since the trade. You know, a lot of those pieces have come together. Certainly, Luka and LeBron are just two remarkable basketball geniuses that can really do everything on a court. Both big guys who are just, you know, shooters, scorers, passers, rebounders, everything, you know, like just triple-double machines. And, you know, putting those two guys together has been just again, remarkable. And you've got another a couple pieces around them that really fit. But Minnesota was apparently just really physical with them. And they've got, you know, a generational player in Anthony Edwards. He's special. I mean, he's just really, really fun to watch. He's a guy that makes a lot of noise, too, and makes big shots and backs it up. But they've got, you know, physical players, that, you know, basically in the you know, in the front court, you know, they go Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert and they're starting five. You know, those two guys bring a lot of muscle, can score at the rim. Gobert's former defensive player of the year, you know, that makes it hard to score around you on the rim, around the rim. They can really rebound. The Lakers, obviously, you know, that's one thing they did give up to get Luka is, you know, a big time, you know, 4 or 5 guy in Anthony Davis. You know, they don't have as much around the rim as they did, and the Timberwolves might be able to take advantage of that. So that's, you know, that's an interesting looking series. I mean, I think, you know, like obviously the Rockets can get up off the mat. You know, that's a team that is super physical. Basically, you know, like Rick Carlisle was saying, and it's pretty much like this, like, you know, sometimes the Rockets throw the ball off the rim just to go get the offensive rebound, you know, like, cause they're that good. They had 22 offensive boards last night and they lost. Like, that's 22 offensive boards in an NBA game is nuts. It is crazy, but that's the kind of size athleticism they have, and they defend the heck out of you. And so, I mean, like, Golden State had a great game. Stephen Curry made just stupid shots last night. Just, I mean, he had one, like, I have no idea how he squared himself to the bucket that, you know, and just threw one in. It was absurd. I mean, he had 3 threes last night that were like Pantheon level Curry threes, you know, that even for Steph are like, I don't even, what, how did you do that? Like that's crazy. And you know, and so that's what it took to beat Houston. And again, Golden State looks terrific with Jimmy Butler and Stephen Curry. I mean, they are looking like a problem. And Draymond Green is, you know, Draymond Green is the finalist for defensive player of the year. I mean, you're seeing kind of a vintage level Draymond season, but Houston just defends the heck out of you. I mean, they've got, you know, they don't have the scoring punch necessarily that you want from a modern team, but they can actually really, really defend modern teams. I mean, they're just a super physical team that they can, you know, Amen Thompson is, you know, both of the Thompson twins are showing you why they were such a big deal. And, you know, and Amen in particular has been, you know, just high level defensive player. And those guys, so those guys are a problem. And there are a bunch of guys who can give the Thunder a series, no doubt about it. It could come from any direction. And really, that whole bottom of the half of the bracket can be wild.
But is there anybody that can actually beat them?
I mean, maybe. You know, I mean, I guess the biggest thing is, like, when it comes to teams like this that have not been there before, like, you're just not sure where their kryptonite is yet. You know, like, I mean, again, last year was Luka. Luka and Kyrie Irving were fantastic in that Western Conference semifinal series. Those guys came together and obviously they ended up making it to the NBA Finals. And so, you know, as much as Oklahoma City has a bunch of great defenders, you know, maybe there's a couple teams that just that have a couple guys that just go off, you know, that just go crazy, you know, make a whole bunch of shots. You know, you don't know what it's going to take, and you don't know if there's going to be someone they run into they haven't seen before that causes a problem that they can't fix, you know. But I would be surprised. And like I said, I've got them winning. And, you know, so, I mean, like, again, maybe they get Steph in the finals, and maybe Steph does just totally remarkable things that aren't possible, that no matter how well he's defended, he manages to, you know, throw things off his back foot into the bucket and still scores 40 points on hits 10 threes. Like, you know, I mean, there's all things are possible, you know, and you'll still have a baseline guy in Jimmy Butler that can get you buckets. I mean, like, you know, maybe it's Golden State, maybe it's the Lakers, you know, maybe they just can't, you know, shut down Luka and LeBron at the same time, and those guys are too much. Maybe I'd be surprised if somebody like the Timberwolves or Rockets could beat them. And there's a chance the Timberwolves and Rockets can take the Lakers and Warriors out. And they end up with just a really physical, you know, conference semifinal series between those two. But, you know, that's not enough to beat the Thunder, whoever comes out of that. But, you know, again, they could end up with Denver next. I mean, and as I think, you know, SGA, I think, is going to be the MVP. I think Joker's still the best player in the world. You know, I mean, he just does things that nobody else is capable of doing and makes it look simple, makes it look easy. And I don't know how. I mean, like, passes he makes, shots he makes. I mean, he just, again, he, you know, the guy looks like he's never lifted a weight in his life, and you're not even sure if he, like, runs a mile in succession. But, like, he is a magician. He is an absolute magician of a basketball player. And, like, he is one of those guys that you shouldn't, you know, take for granted what you're watching. I mean, like, he's an all-timer, period. You know, like, I mean, when it's all said and done, he's at worst a top 20 player, if he's not a top 10 player. You know, I mean, he is doing things we have never seen anyone do before. And so when you have a guy like that, you have to, you know, you have to consider a team like that dangerous. I mean, I don't think the Nuggets have enough depth. Like, I don't think they have as good of players as they had 2 years ago when they won the title. I don't think they're as complete, but, you know, they have Joker and they have enough firepower between Murray and Porter and Christian Brown and Aaron Gordon. Like, there's enough on that team to give you a problem. So, you know, like, you have to be concerned about them.
Dustin DePierre from Indy Star, Pacers beat writer with us. We've got to take a pause for the cause. We've got much more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Back with it. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Grateful to have Dustin DePierre along for the ride from the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all his great coverage on the Pacers as they are in their playoff run right now. Changing subject a little bit, and I know, again, this is not your beat to cover. NIL, there was Matt Norlander had a story out over the weekend that there are several college basketball teams. Well, this is the wild, wild west right now with NIL and the transfer portal and no control, basically, which is nuts. They're going to, and I don't necessarily mean the money. There's no control at all. There's not, it's like there's no rules for anything.
Right.
Tampering is going on, and it's going on both ways. Whether it's a school reaching out, however you want to say, well, it wasn't a school. We didn't do it.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we had somebody do it. Whatever you want to call it. It's still the damn school reaching out to players or players reaching out to schools.
Sure.
That's tampering either way, and I think that that's something that they can do. There has to be a way to say, why can't we? Why are we not allowed to have rules? It's gone from the NCAA to being archaic and having, you know, stone fist of rules to having nothing. Nothing matters. And I'm like, wait a minute now. How are they not allowed to have some rules? Because every time they do something, it seems like they lose in court. And I would imagine if you're a private organization, or if you can, there has to be a way to structure it to where you can have something to some guidelines.
Yeah. No, I mean, I first off, I bring it back to this always. Like, it is really important to remember the NCAA is a member institution. And that we always rail on the people over on the canal, you know, that are working like 3 or 4 miles away from me right now, that we act like they just love nitpicking stuff, and then they just stopped loving nitpicking stuff all the same. Like, no, they get their directions from the schools. The schools come together with their ADs and their presidents and everything else, and they make the rules. And, you know, when they decided it was a violation to buy a kid a bagel at the airport, you know, like, they didn't do that.
Or appear on a charity calendar.
Right. All of those things. Like, like, the people that sit in Indy don't do that. What happens is the schools decided that those things were violations, that they didn't want one school having the advantage of being able to do that for another. They thought that that would be a competitive advantage, all those things. And they also thought, you know, that you know, again, appearing on a school calendar was one step, you know, just on the way to destroying amateurism, which they tried to prop up for years and years and years. And when it all came crashing down, they didn't have any kind of plan for how to deal with that, because they spent years believing that they could hold that up. Basically. And, you know, among the things that brought it crashing down was COVID, when they realized they were asking these kids to prop up the entire institution amidst a global pandemic. And eventually they started realizing, okay, well, we have to let them do this. And once NIL came in, they did not have any plan for what they were really going to do. And they still don't. And so the issue is I just think everybody is waiting for someone else to make the plan, because, I mean, and partially because, like, they have all, like, college athletes have always been a sort of specific class of, for, you know, not employee, but basically, like, we've never determined as a society if they're employees. You know, we never really determined whether they get the same protection as everyone else who has a job, you know, because they're obviously producing revenue and you know, it, like, but they are students, and you know, and so like nobody ever sort of came to the conclusion of, okay, like, well, what do we do with that? Because it's not like anybody else, you know, like, no, like, people do go to school and have jobs at the same time, and they're separate. But like, if you work for the school, if you, you know, are like a secretary in an office, you just get paid for that job, and no one else is trying to get you to do that job at some other school. It's just what you do in between classes. Like, we have a way of handling all this stuff. It for we just have not figured out what to do with this particular class of employee as a country. And you all starting to realize, like, you have to have a sense of what you're doing with that as a country. And, you know, like, it kind of has to run through Congress. And obviously there's a whole lot going on up there to start with. And it's, you know, any law or anything passing through is obviously everybody's chances to get their political points in. And so we just don't have a system that makes sense for us to sit down and say, okay, what are we going to do about this now? How are we going to view these people as far as what protections they have and what they don't, and how do you make this work? And there's obviously the, you know, starting to be enough of a movement of, you know what, they got to have contracts, they got to have employment deals, you know, like, you've got to start treating them like regular employees, because we don't have another way of doing this halfway. You know, it's either A, you know, they start paying taxes and they, you know, like, again, have employment contracts and we, you know, they can form a union and the whole bit, or we're stuck in this limbo forever because it's a mess. And nobody ever wanted, you know, nobody ever wanted them to be employees. Even on NIL was in part to be like, okay, well, they can get paid by somebody else. It doesn't come out of the athletic department budget. We can still have all our other sports. We can still pay all our other employees. You know, if someone else pays these guys, that's fine. You know, they can be paid, they can get their money. It doesn't come from the department. It doesn't kill this. But then you had collectives form and you had all these other things come about, and it's just, everybody is just frozen. I mean, I think that's just really what it is everybody just sort of feels paralyzed and frozen in place because they don't have a broader sense of what this has to be. I don't know why there's not sort of an in-between of, okay, this is what it is right now. We can wait on Congress. We can wait on, you know, there being federal legislation for how we deal with this. But this being what it is right now, this is what this is how it has to function, because it's basically non-functional. You're right. Like, it's so far, you know, nuts that nothing is being enforced. And, you know, because they're waiting on it, it's almost like they don't know what's even fair. And I get that. Like, I get not knowing what's fair. Like, you know, again, if you can, you know, like, tampering. I mean, like, again, like, it's like, what's the difference if you're this far down that rabbit hole? You know, like, you get a phone call a little bit early to find out what your market looks like. Again, like, that is the thing that happens in regular employment. You can talk to somebody, you know, if you have a job and another job is open, you can call somebody and say, hey, what, you know, would I have a shot at this, you think? You know, like, I mean, I've done that, you know, for sure. I'm sure everybody in my profession has done that and said, hey, I'm thinking about applying. Do you think I'd have a crack at this? You know, and so so it's like, obviously it feels more untoward because it's talking about leaving colleges, and it feels like there should be something tethering you to where you're going to school, and that there should be something more sacred than that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's saying, well, where is the, like, do I have a better opportunity elsewhere or don't I? You know, and, you know, like, yes, schools are reaching out, like, would you want them? Basically, and agents are reaching out and saying, okay, would you want this guy? Because if not, he'll stay, but he's interested in playing for you, you know, so would you have a crack at it? And so all these things, and again, they're not, like, necessarily on an individual basis that crazy compared to just regular employment. But again, you don't have anything tethering you at all. And number one, number two, like, you just can't have this many people doing it at the same time. You know, like, it is just too big, too many humans moving at the same time for it to be manageable for anyone else to be able to function. And so, you know, like, I think what coaches would ask for at this point would be multi-year deals.
those are actually available now. Mm-hmm. You've been able to do that. Nigel Pack's original deal was a multi-year deal.
Sure.
But guys are smart to not do that.
Sure.
Because just look at the money last year to this year. It's more doubled and a half or thereabouts.
Right, so exactly. What's the point in staying? Yeah.
You'd lose money. Well, you can stay, but you'd lose money by doing a double deal.
Right, exactly. If you don't renegotiate every year, like, there is a bag that is sitting there that you're not taking. And, yeah, like, it's wild. I mean, I still – what is – the part that I was totally wrong about and that I thought would keep this sane. And again, obviously no one was asking me whether they should do it or not do it. But you know, I thought, okay, well, when it comes to investing in these kids as sort of advertising people, like they're going to find out real quick, the college students aren't good investments and they're not going to get their return. And so the money's only going to go so high. What blows my mind still is the extent to which people throwing their money at this don't care if they get an ROI. Like that is the part
that cannot last. And that can't last.
But if you pull it together, apparently it can. Apparently there are enough people out there that have seven figures worth of completely disposable income.
I'm not one of them.
No, nor am I.
Kenneth brings up a great point, says, I wonder how much talent is going to be left over the next couple of years coming from Europe. The international invasion of high-skilled players is going to make college game wild this year. Well, this is something that is happening because, yeah. And I look back to Marshall in soccer a few years ago. They beat Indiana in the NCAA tournament. That would have never, ever happened. But if you had looked down Marshall's roster, you would have found one American starting on that Marshall team. One. There is no way that drives me nuts. There's a reason why these basketball leagues in Europe have a rule that you can only have two Americans on it. And I think that something like that has got to be done. But, of course, it's the NCAA, so it has to be somebody else who puts that rule in place. The NCAA will lose that in court.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's – it obviously depends on how far it's going to go. And, well, you know, the other piece is that it's one thing to do it in soccer. It's another thing to do it in basketball because I don't think – I think the United States has way too much pride to say that there can only be so many Europeans on a college team because it's sort of like acknowledging or saying that, you know, European guys are going to be better players than Americans. And I don't think, the United States is at all willing to write that kind of rule and to say that only so many you can only have so many European basketball players on a team, because it's just saying like, what, we're not good enough. There is going to be an influx though of European players because it's finally saying there is enough money over here that makes it worth it. In fairness, I mean, there was, I remember talking to European players, you know, long before NIL was even discussed and they kind of said like, you don't actually realize how good of a deal this is. I remember one player's name is Gabriel Shami. He was on the first James Madison team I covered. So like right out of college. And he was like, you guys don't realize how good of a deal you have it. He's like in Spain, like I got to play basketball and go to school. And like, you know, like I don't get to do both together. Basically, you know, it's like they're not in the same place. If I want to go to school while I'm playing basketball, I need to go to a university where no one cares that I play basketball. You know, that doesn't matter, you know, and they're just like, you're expected to be in school. Like if you skip school, like you don't get, you know, a tutor coming with you on the road, you know, like that's your thing. That's your separate deal. We don't care about that here. He's like, the fact that you can come to the United States and it's integrated in your education is pretty remarkable. It's a pretty good deal. And so again, like the money was too good for some of them, you know, for the best players to come to the United States. But it was always attractive, you know, in the first place for people that weren't quite at that level, that were really good, but weren't quite at that level to come over. Because again, you could do all of it in one place, you know, like you didn't, you know, and obviously there's the investment on the behalf of the player, or there's the investment on behalf of the school to go recruit. But now, exactly. Now they're going to get paid. The money is such that it's like, okay, what's the point of sitting on the bench for Inter Milan or Barcelona or somebody like that? When you're, you know, surrounded by, real pros, and you're not getting any minutes as an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or whatever, then you can come to the United States now and get paid. I mean, you were getting paid to be on that team before, but now you're really getting paid to play in college, and you can, you know, you can get a free education in as many schools as you want to, you know, and have a clearer pathway into the NBA. And when you know, they're going to be, it's going to be easier for them to see you. Basically, certainly the NBA has enough people who go over to watch, you know, top level European basketball, but still, you know, it's easier if they could just find you in the States and line you up against the guys who play in college. It's going to be something else. I mean, I don't see them making a rule that says there can only be so many, you know, like I don't see them going down that path. I don't think they want to go down that
path. And you made a great point with the players say, "Oh, we're not, you know, we're fine." And it is true, but also though, these foreign players, they're basically playing professional ball before they're playing college. Sure. There's no difference. And so they're kind of ahead of the game, ahead of the curve a lot of times from that standpoint.
Yeah, the club system. I mean, it's now, you know, it is, it isn't, you know, like there are, you know, like there are obviously positives and minuses to, you know, like both of these kind of approaches of saying, okay, you're going to throw these guys in with professionals, but it's like, okay, how much are they, what does that development look like? On some level, it's more professional. On some level, like how much do you get to play? You know, like how much do you get to really play? I mean, some of these are, you know, some of them have feeder systems, they have younger teams, you know, that kinds of things. And, you know, there are, you know, like you can get into the weeds over, you know, how are we developing players here? How are they developing players there? You know, how much better are they? I mean, there's obviously been a shift that, you know, how many years has it been since you've had an American born MVP now? You know, it's been a bit. And so, but you know, it's not like you still don't have Steph and Durant and LeBron. It's not like they didn't just win an Olympic gold medal. It's not like you still don't have, you know, a lot of great players coming out of the United States, but you know, it's not like you have like one country that's figured it out. It's just, you're talking about the entire globe. It has, you know, just had basketball pushed upon it, you know, going back to the 92 Olympics, and they've figured out different ways. And there's some things that are better than some things are not. I mean, I think on some level you're demanding even more specialization as much as we're talking about. I think here, the extent to which the multi-sport athlete is, you know, that there's, you know, becoming fewer of that, there's less opportunity to be able to play everything. You know, if you really want to dial that up a notch, you know, follow the club system, and these kids have to decide at like 16 what they're going to play, or 15 or somewhere on that range, and that you're going to be all the way in on a club system. And so it's, you know, but there are still good things about the way the States does it, you know, and it's still the best basketball country in the world. So, there's an advantage for some of those guys to come over, but you know, there are advantages to playing in the States. You know, there's advantage to playing with someplace like Montfort Academy, you know, like that's not nothing, or IMG or La Lemire or someplace like that when you're playing a national schedule. Like there's something coming out of that too. And there's something coming out of just playing Indiana high school basketball, man. You can't, you know, rule that out either. That's something in itself. So
you know, I tell you who likes that. Greg Rakestraw, baby. He is all about some Indiana high school basketball and much more. And we'll talk to Greg here in a second. Dustin DePerrick, Indy Star, beat writer for the Pacers, and sports knowledgeist all around. Appreciate you, my friend.
Oh, Jim, thanks so much.
You betcha. Hey, we've got more coming up with Greg Straw, speaking the devil.
The ISC Sports Network is your home for sports content across the Hoosier State. Find us live on TV and streaming or archived on our website and our app. The ISC is your one-stop shop for the content you want to see, including high school sports, college sports, and other great events throughout the year. Subscribe to our streaming service and get access to it all. ISC, local lives here.
Ah, the ISC Sports Network. You want to keep up with everything going on inside the Hoosier State, whether it's high school, college, soccer. He's got it all, baby. Greg Rakestraw, the man behind it, with us now. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I went out to the patio because I've got the, like, every other week house cleaners that are here at this time. And, of course, there's a tree being chopped down two houses away. So background noise okay for you, Jim?
Absolutely, it's beautiful. We just love hearing that anyway, so it's all good. People are chopping down trees every day. They were chopping down trees today. Chris Ballard has some trees to chop down to get this Indianapolis Colts team back on the path to winning, basically. It's so weird to see Andrew Luck now out at Stanford kind of running the GM of Stanford football, and he is legitimately the GM, not just in role, because he seems to have be a notch above the coach, which at most places the coach hires the GM.
So this is that is a unique situation because obviously they've got an interim head coach. You know, Frank Reich is going to be the head coach for 1 year now.
I've heard of him. Some
right. That name, yeah, those guys have worked together before with some degree of success. and so if Frank, now knowing Frank, he's an interim coach, being an interim coach. If this marriage goes well, then it's a different scenario. So yes, we're all a bit older now that Andrew Luck has moved into a management position. And if you want to phrase it this way, as of this year, it'll be 7 years since Andrew last played for the Colts. Yeah, that makes me feel old there as well. But now the reason I'm on the tail end of the show, and I to let the listening audience in, I sent Jim a text yesterday afternoon. I said, hey, instead of putting me on the first segment of the show this week, how about you put me on the last segment of the show? That way, instead of giving a preview of the Chris Ballard pre-draft press conference, I could tell you all about the Chris Ballard pre-draft press conference. So hence, you actually get me in a stationary location in the backyard, and we can talk about what Chris said in the pre-draft conference, which, as most general managers do, is a whole lot of nothing. They're not going to tip their hand or anything like that. There are some, you know, typical kind of draft statements, like Bill Polian was famous for basically saying, hey, listen, you know, there's 32 picks in the first round, but we only had a first-round grade on 17, 18 guys. Chris did not go that far, but what Chris said is on his board. And, again, to give you a frame of reference, there's 257, I think, picks in this year's NFL draft. The Colts' board, in terms of guys they would actually draft, is probably between 155 and 175. I thought the most couple of telling things that Chris shared from the press conference today were this, because it's our first chance to have talked to Chris since the combine about 6-7 weeks ago. Kind of the biggest player news in terms of a guy being let go, or somewhat surprisingly, was the kicker in Matt Gay. And Matt, you know, was brought on a big, you know, big ticket contract for a kicker 2 years ago. He was great from 50 and under. He was not great above 50 yards. Chris was very adamant in pointing out that this move was more about the way they felt about Spencer Schrader, who was in camp last year, kicked for a couple of weeks when Matt was hurt, then went and kicked for a couple of other teams during the course of the season. The team then brought him back during the course of the offseason. And so Chris was very much, hey, it's because we like Spencer Schrader more so than what we didn't like about Matt Gay. Which is why they made the move. Now, he also said they would bring in a second kicker because they always do that. But clearly it seems the kicker's job is Spencer Schrader's to lose. In terms of the quarterback battle, which unofficially starts tomorrow, which is the first full day of off-season workouts beginning for the Indianapolis Colts, he didn't say they're going to play a two-quarterback system. But he did say, I expect both guys to help us at some point in time, and kind of listed some of the similarities in terms of what has happened in the past for both Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson. So that derby is on, effective as of tomorrow. The other thing is, too, the obvious position of need, Jim, for the Indianapolis Colts is help at the tight end position in terms of being able to have a tight end that is more of a pass-catching threat, because that player did not exist for the Indianapolis Colts last year. They love what they got in the run blocking game from those guys, most notably Mo Alie Cox. You know, Drew Ogletree would be of that group. You know, they've got six tight ends on the roster, but this is a draft where they have to pick up a tight end. There's a couple of guys that have been linked to the Colts in around pick number 14. If you put faith in most of the mock drafts, you know, Tyler Warren, the Colts want him, they have to go up and get him. Simply put, he's not going to be there at 14. You know, I have seen him at 7. I have seen him at 10. The other guy that seems to be kind of hovering around the Colts at 14 would be the Loveland kid out of Michigan. And so Chris did say it is a deep tight end class. He also pointed out that, hey, if you look around the great tight ends in the league, there are some guys that are third-round picks. George Kittle was a fifth-round pick. Other guys like Brock Bowers was a first-round pick who was linked, again, potentially to being a Colts, you know, pick a season ago. So some of that could just be kind of smoke to kind of, you know, disguise what Chris is thinking about with pick 14 or somewhere in that vicinity coming up on Thursday. But it is the most obvious glaring need this football team has, is they have to address the tight end position at some point in time on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. and probably as sooner rather than later is the way that Chris Ballard and company will treat it.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see where this draft ends up for the Colts, because they've caught a lot of grief over the last few years, and a lot of that has surrounded Anthony Richardson.
Sure.
Because of they're waiting for him to either, you know, do his business or get off the pot, and I think that that's starting to pass by, but they're still giving it a chance, but they're kind of in this limbo land right now. They don't have a true, I mean, they have a quarterback, but you're like wondering, do they have a quarterback? You know, so it's this kind of weird situation.
Right. Everything is based on 2025. Now, to Chris's credit, he was kind of asked about, hey, does the pressure that is on you and this organization to win this year, does it affect how you draft? And he says, no, you always have to draft for the long term. But Chris, you know, acknowledges, I think the clock is ticking on him, on Shane Steichen, and the way that free agent contracts were done going into last season. Guys were set up on 2 and 3 year deals with the idea of either you're going to have to reboot because you're going to have to pay Anthony Richardson, you know, big time quarterback dollars at the end of his rookie contract, which he is literally on year three of what would be 4 or 5 years. Or if you flip the other side, if that doesn't work, then you are to a rebuild mode for this team, period. And so, you know, Chris has been in his public comments, which are not a lot, you know, say from the end of the season until now. Basically, you have the end of the season press conference, which is in the usual the week after the end of the regular season. Then you have his comments, you know, that are late February, early March in terms of the combine, pre-draft press conference, and then whatever. Usually have 2 or 3 different avails, say Thursday through Saturday, in and around the NFL draft. Those are the chance we have to hear, you know, chance to hear from him. You know, he has said, listen, I get it. We're under pressure. You know, it was a pleasant surprise 2 years ago to win 9 games, but disappointing not to make the playoffs. It was a bitter disappointment this past year to not be a playoff team. And I think Chris is well aware that, hey, you have to win now. And to me, it's a 2-pronged goal. It is obviously the ultimate goal is to win the AFC South. Look, this franchise is now not done for 11 years, dating back to 2014. But the end-all, be-all is this going to be a playoff team? If this is a playoff team for the first time since 2020, then yes, this will be a successful season. If not, it's reboot time. It is as cut and dry, Jim, and as simple as that.
And that makes it pretty simple. What is up next for you, my friend? Because I know even though you have this going on today, there is always a lot more to the story.
So, got baseball and softball next few days. Baseball game of note tomorrow, Indiana State and Illinois. I'll have that one on ESPN+. Plus, from a basketball standpoint, because with the sun literally behind me, the sun never sets on basketball in this state. I have the annual Hoosier Gym Classic, and there are now so many different all-star games that lead up to the Indiana-Kentucky series in the first week in June. Obviously not including a McDonald's All-American level game, even though a McDonald's All-American player will be playing in the game I've got on Saturday, that being Braylon Mullins. The Hoosier Gym Classic in Knightstown is the best compilation of talent that generally we get before the Indiana Kentucky All-Star Games. I will say this. There is an event that is a maybe lesser-known event called the Midwest Challenge that Anthony Leach and the guys at SVI Sportswear and Prep Ball Stars put together. And I know that this hits the sweet spot of again, your recruiting base, Jim, and your audience. So in 3 weeks, on May 10th, at the Farmers Bank Fieldhouse in Lebanon, Jalen Harrelson, Braylon Mullins, and Trent Sisley – and other all-stars in the state of Indiana will play together. There will be 2 games for the Indiana team. It's Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Illinois. To give you an idea of the talent from other states that has played in this game, Tyrese Halliburton played in this game when he graduated from high school in the state of Wisconsin. So if you want a chance to see a couple of guys that didn't finish their careers as a high school basketball player, you can see those guys playing together at the Farmers Bank Fieldhouse, May 10th in Lebanon. If you cannot be there, We at ISC Sports Network will have the coverage. So this Saturday, Hoosier Gym, girls game 11, boys game at 1. Our next All-Star weekend will be 2 weekends after that, Farmers Bank Fieldhouse in Lebanon.
That sounds like a perfect recipe and a perfect reason to go to the ISC Sports Network.
And thank you so much for playing that promo. I was introduced by my own voice, which is something, well, on ISC, I'm frankly used to. I'm just glad we finally got a promo that's not Jim Coyle's voice on during the course.
You and me both, my brother, and we'll be using it every Monday and more so. But thank you very much for that. And thank you for being with us today, as always. Appreciate you taking the time to move your schedule around so you could give us that information.
Well, I wanted to make sure we gave you the best possible segment. Look forward to talking to you at 8:45 next Monday.
Brother, you have a great one. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jim.
Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And appreciate everybody on the program today. Of course, Dustin DePerrick, Zach Browning with all that information. We're back tomorrow as everything continues. The football portal open until, what, Friday? The basketball portal, what's it close? It closes today, or tomorrow, rather. But just because the portal itself closes, that means you just can't put your name in it. But those names will be bouncing around regardless. Man, a great, another fun time today. Appreciate each and every one of you. We're back tomorrow to do this again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.